As you're probably aware by now, and if you aren't, I've got news for you. Thanksgiving is tomorrow. In honor of the holiday, today's installment of Globivores, Food Travels Around the World Since 1492, is all about the turkey. And we are joined now by food historian Andrew Smith, the author of numerous books, including The Turkey, An American Story, also the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America, and chef, restaurateur, and cookbook author Waldy Maloof, whose restaurants have included the Hudson River Club, the Rainbow Room, Beacon, currently High Heat, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of them back to our program. Hello.
Hello. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Andrew, are wild turkeys indigenous throughout the Americas?
No. They are indigenous to much of North America, historically only on the eastern coast, the southern part, and then Central America.
And were they eaten by American Indians and the peoples of Mexico?
Some Indian groups ate them. Others thought that they were cowardly and they didn't want to eat a cowardly bird because they would become cowardly. But the vast majority of Native American groups did eat them, and of course they were domesticated in Mexico.
Cowardly because they tend to be rather docile?
Because they run away when you catch them. I don't understand that. I don't understand why, but they would do that.
Someone wants to kill me and eat me.
So they weren't domesticated?
They were domesticated. They were domesticated in Mexico, and they probably had a secondary point of domestication in the American Southwest.
And when did Europeans first encounter
them? The first encounter was 1518. So you really don't have any contact with turkeys prior to that time, and they're immediately viewed. The golden eyes of people look at that and say, that's the greatest bird we've ever seen introduced into Europe. It's the first New World food that is adopted in Europe.
All throughout Europe?
Yep. Almost immediately, because you can raise them anywhere. I mean, they grow relatively easily in southern Europe and in under certain conditions in northern Europe as well.
Waldy, how different does a wild turkey taste compared to the kind we find in the supermarket?
The wild turkeys actually taste very, very different, and the texture's different. Not as opposed to, like, the heritage breeds, but the wild turkeys, the one tastes much... not gamey like a game bird, but more meaty, more flavorful, but tougher. And there's very little, I guess you'd call it meat-to-bone ratio. There's very little breast meat on a wild turkey.
Opposite to the domesticated turkeys that have been bred to yield increasingly more white meat.
Yes.
But white meat is the least flavorful part of the bird, isn't it?
It has almost no flavor, which maybe is why we were speaking earlier, which is maybe why people like it, because you're able to flavor it and put whatever you like on it. That's why perhaps turkey sandwiches are so popular all the rest of the year.
In addition, it has less fat, and so it became the dieter's choice of meat.
And
hence no flavor.
So I suspect, Waldy, you like one of the other kinds, whether it's heritage or wild or free range. I don't know about organic.
There are organics available. I buy my turkeys from Cascoon Farms up in Greene. The name of the city is Greene, New York. It's upstate near Syracuse, and I buy both kinds. I buy heritage ones, usually a Bourbon Red or an Narragansett.
And what does a heritage mean if it's not a wild turkey?
They haven't been – well, you might answer that a little bit better than I, but they haven't been bred to have these large, more white meat, and they can breed themselves. They don't have to be artificially inseminated, and it's more of a natural bird.
And what about how they're fed? Does that affect the taste?
I believe it does very much so. The birds that I buy are free range. Most farms will finish birds with some sort of grain or something like that to when I say finish, the last couple weeks of feeding for weight and fat and muscle. But the more wild weeds, things that they would naturally find in the wild, berries, even herbs, it does have an effect on the flavor of the meat.
Andrew, Waldy said that The store-bought type are artificially inseminated?
Yes.
We can't allow nature to take its own course?
Well, they have such a broad breast, they can't. I mean, it's not a question of choosing to do that. It's a question that they have such a big breast that the males cannot mate with the females. So all of them are artificially inseminated. You can think about that tomorrow.
Turkeys do not relate to... male turkeys do not relate to female turkeys the way humans relate to...
It sounds like not.
So why do we call them turkeys?
Good question, and the answer is unknown. That's the English word. There's no other Europeans will use that term, and so it comes into it. Supposedly, the turkey originated in India because of Christopher Columbus, who came to America to look for India, says he found it, and therefore they thought it was India, and it came through Turkey, which it didn't. But then the English misinterpreted everything, which they do with many other things, and they gave it the word turkey.
And so we only call it turkey in English. What do other countries call it?
A davo. I mean, it's got a whole pavo. I mean, it's got a whole dindi.
It's got
a thousand different words.
And after a while, the Europeans thought that they were a European bird, didn't they? Didn't the pilgrims bring turkeys with them when they came to
No, but the turkey had been adopted in England in 1550. I mean, it was a common bird served at Christmas at that point. So when the pilgrims arrived in 1621, they took one look around and said, well, there are all these turkeys out here. They later introduced domesticated turkeys. Domesticated turkeys go from Mexico into Spain, from Spain into Europe, England, from England then come back into what's today the United States.
Well, it was easy to transport them across the Atlantic even on those long journeys because they are rather docile.
Not only docile, but they eat anything. Yeah. I mean, they're absolutely eclectic in their flavoring taste. So whatever is there, they'll eat.
Now, Waldy, I can't. You want to say something?
No, I said, and they probably sleep a lot. So that's,
I came across an Aztec recipe which calls for an entire turkey to be cooked, chopped, mixed with cornmeal to make a tamale, and then served with a chili sauce, which sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
it actually does.
You have some here?
Should have given it to me yesterday. I would have brought you one. We're cooking a lot of turkeys today.
Can you still find turkey in Mexican cuisine today?
Oh, absolutely.
It's very common.
It's used a lot. I imagine over the years, chicken is going to replace it more and more. But I believe originally it was probably one of the biggest poultries used in Mexican cuisine.
Well, it's the only indigenous bird that gets used, isn't it?
Only two that were domesticated. The other was a guinea fowl. Yeah. So
are they related?
Yeah, guinea fowl and
it's interesting.
And
guinea fowl again. Nothing ever gets. The Mexicans don't get any credit for.
No, anything. They never get credit for anything that they do. But if you go to Mexico, of course, the Aztec word for turkey is used in Mexico. So it's not. They don't adopt our turkey word.
Now, what is that?
Oh, you knew you're going to.
Oh, you're right.
Just
never mind.
My mind.
Well, there are so many different languages, regional languages. Nahuatl, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was Nahuatl, yeah.
Waldy, you said you're going to be cooking a lot of turkeys. How are you going to be preparing them?
Well, we're starting them today at Beacon, my restaurant in Midtown. This is our 14th Thanksgiving. Sort of comes from the Hudson River Club where we did it and Rainbow Room, and now we've been doing it.
Well,
here.
You were a locavore before the word was even coined, I think.
I think we sort of were very instrumental in starring the Farm to Table, although we didn't call it Farm to Table then. The Hudson River Club we opened in the late 80s, and that was the whole premise of it. And so, yes, I guess I was a little ahead of my time at the time, but. And the Hudson River Valley Cookbook was all about that, and I still adhere to that and work with a lot of farmers, and the turkey farm that I work with, Cancun Farm, is a great place like that I've worked with for a long time. So we're cooking about 35 to 40 turkeys today.
When you say cooking them, you're not frying them.
No, we don't. I don't adhere to the fried. We partially roast them, and then at Beacon we finish them in the wood burning oven. We break them down and finish them in the wood burning oven, so they get a little bit of smoke flavor, and then we make a Riesling reduction and do a nice Riesling sauce with it. Serve two different stuffings with it, and all the sides and accompaniments, and it's a quite special.
It sounds
special
delicious,
time.
But when I said fry, you kind of winced. So you think there's something wrong with that approach?
It's a novelty. I think it's an interesting, probably a fun and interesting way to do it. Although it's probably very dangerous. Most people don't understand that they shouldn't be doing it that way. And you know, they'll use a partially frozen bird, and all of a sudden there's a half gallon of water and boiling oil, and that doesn't mix and work very well, and somebody gets hurt. But
it tastes so good.
It does taste good. Oh, okay. In the South, it's actually done much more than it is. Here, which makes sense because you should be doing it outside, but I don't recommend it as the preferred cooking method.
My guests are chef and cookbook author Waldy Maloof and historian Andrew Smith, who actually wrote a book called The Turkey, An American Story. Andrew, why is the turkey the bird that we eat during the Thanksgiving holiday? Why not the guinea hen, or why not just chicken?
It's bigger than a chicken, and it serves a lot of people, and it's one of the least expensive meats that are out there. So if you're going to have a family get-together, it's a perfect place and perfect, it's centerpiece for your table. So it works out very nicely, and it has historically been there from the late 18th century on today.
Although there have been attempts again and again to improve on what you can do with it, cut it up, cook the dark meat separately. What are your thoughts on the turducken? We always get that question from our listeners.
Well, it's a fun thing to try. I haven't seen very many people do it very well. Even things that I've seen on television and things. Again, it's a novelty. It's something that's sort of fun to do.
It's a lot of work.
I wouldn't suggest it to anyone to do for Thanksgiving unless they've done it 100 times before, because it is a lot of work and it takes a long time, and there's a very good chance that it's not going to turn out the way that you want it to.
Now, a listener, Pat, left a comment on our show page. She said, we'll be cooking a wild turkey. After experimenting with this, we have settled on putting it in a brine for a few hours, simple salt and water, rubbing well with fat of choice, home-rendered lard this year, and cooking in a turkey bag with a few apples and celery inside. Is that approach an approach you would recommend?
If they've used turkey bags before and they've had success with them, I mean, you're more or less stewing, steaming at that point, as opposed to roasting, although it's partially being roasted. I would probably, if it's a wild turkey, I would probably brine it for a little bit more than a couple hours. And I would probably add some sugar to the brine. So there's a little sugar.
Brown sugar or regular?
It could be brown sugar or regular sugar, and maybe some spices, some
toasted
peppercorns.
What about rubbing it with the fat? Do turkeys need extra fat?
You could stick some under the skin, which is what I would do. Rubbing on the top really isn't going to do much except go in the bottom of the pan. But if you were to mix some with some herbs or some chopped shallots or a little garlic or something and slide it under the skin and then loosely tie it, it would slowly feed into the meat a little bit, which would help, and it's going to end up flavoring the gravy or the sauce more than anything.
Historically, you would have put lard inside the turkey. You would have injected it in, and that's the basis behind the butterball turkey, mm-hmm. which they try and inject something like butter into the inside.
So we take this bird, which we like for being lean, and we make it unlean.
Yes. Of course.
And then we brine it to give it some flavor.
We like to talk about it being lean. We don't really want it to be lean. We serve it with butter-filled stuffing and gravies.
And historically, you would have boiled the turkey first and then put it and roasted it so that it would have cooked all through, and then you would have roasting it would have given your outside flavor that people love. So
is that what the pilgrims would have done?
I extremely doubt whether the pilgrims did that, at least not in the first few years, because they didn't have pots and they didn't have a lot of other things, but they would typically have roasted them.
Now, you get soup that way.
True.
You, of course, when you're eating a wild turkey, you have to watch out for birdshot, don't you?
Yes.
You can break a tooth.
Usually. If we serve wild game at Beacon, and you find birdshot, you get free dessert. That's how we deal with that.
Well, you can take it home. Is brining the best way to avoid the dry turkey that so many people fear?
Well, overcooking is what creates the dry turkey, that you can cook it without it being dry by not overcooking it. But brining does help. There's sometimes a sanitary reason for a salt wash and a brine. Also, particularly in a wild turkey, if it's been hung or if it's been aged or anything like that, which is a good thing to do also with a bird like that. But we brine it in a herbed brine that we put garlic, black pepper, juniper berries, clove, and that actually infuses into the meat and adds flavor to the bird and the brining. The salt and sugar does keep the turkey a little bit moister.
I usually throw in a bay leaf or two just because you throw it into everything else.
Yeah, why not?
It's fine.
Andrew, the Climate Exchange brought all kinds of fruits and vegetables to the rest of the world from the Americas. Turkey seems to be the only protein that really caught on overseas. What do you think that is?
Well, there wasn't much protein here. I mean, if you look at it, you only have two domesticated animals, and so it's the one that's adopted there. So you don't have many other things. Now, of course, buffalo were exported at one point, but the buffalo, I don't know if you've ever had buffalo meat, but unlike the beefalo cows that are currently available in stores, the buffalo meat, no one really liked it. The haunches and the tongues were different. So
now we have buffalo burgers, bison burgers, but they're from
special
breed.
Yeah, they're not from buffalo.
Buffalo, of course, were endangered species for a while. Were turkeys ever endangered?
Yes, in fact, they were, and it's one of the good they almost became extinct beginning about 1900 to about 1920, and it's one of the tremendous successes of the environmental movement that they've been reintroduced to such an extent that farmers upstate are very unhappy with the amount of wild turkeys that are floating around.
Now, Waldy, Americans abroad tell me that they still find it rather hard to get a turkey at Thanksgiving if they want to celebrate in a foreign country, despite the fact that turkeys are eaten there? Is it just not this time of year?
You worked
in French kitchens.
In my travels in France and in Italy, you never really saw whole turkeys or sold like we sell them. You know, there was no butter. You didn't see the butterball turkeys. And honestly, I didn't see it that much except in sort of cold deli sort of situations in Europe. Or fresh ground turkeys or anything at high heat, or my pizza burger shop in Greenwich Village, we do a turkey burger that sells tremendously well, but you don't see that sort of thing in Europe very much. And so I'm not sure how it's perceived there.
Andrew, we have a little time, but a listener asked about wild turkeys he's seen on Staten Island.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
You can't just grab one and cook it, can you?
Why not?
Well, I heard about it.
If nobody sees you.
I heard about a restaurateur on Long Island Sound who put breadcrumbs out into the sound, and the Long Island ducks, the wild ones, came into his restaurant, and he was serving them, and he was arrested.
A restaurant can't do that.
I don't know what regulations there are with regard to hunting turkeys, but as far as I know, why can't you? And it's,
at home,
wild
you
turkey
can.
Is a
I
wild
can't
turkey.
Sell. I can't sell them.
You can't sell game.
I can't hunt it. I have to buy from a licensed purveyor.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Waldy Maloof, chef, restaurateur, cookbook author, his current restaurants Beacon and High Heat. And Andrew Smith, thank you for coming back again to talk about another part of the Climate Exchange. Andrew's book, The Turkey, An American Story. Do you talk a lot about the turkeys also in the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America?
I just happened to write that entry, too. I don't know why the connection is there. Yes,
so you know a lot about turkeys.
I love turkeys.
And how do you prepare it?
I prepare it exactly the way everybody else does. I put it in the oven and roast it for 3 hours. So
that works.
Thank you both so much for being on
the
show.
Thank you for having me.